Blog Talk Radio.
Politics on the Navajo Nation.
You're listening to Navajo Politics with Cal Nez, and this is Cal Nez, as Cody said. Navajo Nation joined us nice on the United States, but yeah, ako yate this Sunday evening, ako I am looking for somebody. I've arranged a couple of callers. I'm not sure if they're gonna have enough gumption, bravery for them to give me a call. Because one of the things that I wanted to do was do a live report from the Navajo Nation Fair. I believe tonight is Miss Navajo's coronation. We have, I believe there's a, of course, there's a carnival going on. We've got everything else. I guess the parade happened this morning. If anybody saw the parade, I sure like to get some information from people out there, see what their thoughts were, and how was the presentation of the entire Navajo Nation. Did it run long? Was it too short? Was it all politics, or was it not politics? And those politicians, did they present themselves as to how that you were expecting them to present themselves? So, Navajo Nation Fair, at Window Rock, Arizona, day 7. Right now it's about 10 after 7, and I'd like to invite you to call in and tell us what's on your mind. There's a lot of jockeying yesterday, about the Navajo Nation election and the results. And I basically said all along that right from the get-go, a lot of people should have been on their feet studying all of the candidates and what the possible scenario could be in terms of who finished up with who and what they represent and what is tied to them. I think that one of the issues that I have throughout the whole campaign was just the information. The writing that Bill Donovan did on his guest commentary in the Navajo Nation, that was something that I looked at. Of course, I know Bill very well. He was on my previous show, and I'm still going to bring him back on, and I am going to go in there and find out what where he's at. I have had Marley Shabala. She was one of my guests also on the politics on the Navajo Nation. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to combine this show and that show together and make it back into one and have it run on its Wednesday evening. But the reason why that I did all the shows this week is so that we can get information out there as the deadline for any type of a ethics complaint in the Navajo Nation primaries, and I wanted to get feedback from people. But having said that, was there a complaint, and was there not a complaint? If there was a complaint, what was the complaint? And so that's one of the interesting thing. If not, you know, are we going to just unify and say and shake hands and move forward? There's a lot of issues that I guess we can sit here and challenge over and over and over again. But then on the other hand, there's a lot of people who are saying, if we challenge every election, it sets a certain amount of precedence. And this precedence would not be good for our Navajo Nation government and its election cycle. But nonetheless, my question the other night for all of you was, are we happy with the results? Or are we mad? What is it? What do you feel? And if there's oppositions, if there's, you know, of course, not everybody's going to be happy. I mean, that's with politics. It is what it is. I ran, and I didn't, you know, of course, I wasn't one of the two. But, you know, life goes on. We live. And I think one of the reasons why that people fight so absolutely hard for these positions, and it just proves what that I've said all along, and that is that the Navajo Nation government is the largest and the biggest employer. The biggest employer. Now think about that. Everybody would be fighting for their job. If there were other scenarios, if there were other options, like let's say in a like in a state, doesn't matter how big the state is, you have a functioning economics. And there's many other opportunities for people to get employment besides the government. Government is just one of the employers. And then, but there's many others. Of course, you go back on the Navajo Nation, how many businesses are there? I can literally count on my hand how many businesses are existing there. Gas stations, how many people really can work there? We've got Bash's. We've got a couple of other grocery stores. And also, what is there? Then you go to the fast food chain. And how many of them are there? But aside from that, any type of manufacturing, there's very, very little. If not, it takes us back to what I've said all along. 350,000 Navajos on and off the reservation, about 150,000 located on the Navajo Nation, and the remainder are off the Navajo Nation. Now, there is, you know, again, I think for now, a lot of people have finally awoken, but it's after the fact. And what I mean by it being after the fact is that the Navajo people, when we have 350,000 population, there's a lot of there's a lot of need, there's a lot of wants, there's a lot of unfulfilled economic situations. Okay, think about that. The Navajo Nation has a department called the Navajo Business Regulatory Department, and they are given the responsibility to implement the contracting, or at least monitor the contracts from within the Navajo Nation government. That office is not supposed to be testing, monitoring, doing all sorts of things. Of course, yes, we've got to go in there and apply, and then once you apply to get on the Navajo source list, that's what you get on eventually, and after that happens, then you move forward and you get on the source list, and then the source list is supposed to be utilized by the Navajo Nation government. So for any type of contracting, the first place you're supposed to go to is looking at the source list. And based on that, if there's somebody's on there, well, they get first opportunity. That first opportunity is also a law. It gives Navajo businesses preferences, preference to bid on a contract, but they must be first certified with the with the Navajo Business Regulatory Department. So, but based on that, the Navajo Nation only has 194 Navajo businesses who are either 100% or 50% or no, 51% owned. The majority owned must be a Navajo owned business. So, but if you look at it, 350,000 Navajos on and off the reservation, and we only have 194. What are the percentages on that? Very, very low. I also heard that just recently the Navajo Nation Division of Economic Development and RBDO, they made a report where, I guess in the year of 2013, they only produced 5 business loans, or leases, excuse me. They only produce 5 business leases. So that tells you how our economy is, quote, not growing, if at all, just barely. And so now back to the election. So we're placed in a position where people absolutely have to fight and fend for their jobs. And by fighting for their jobs, it means that in a lot of cases they have to, quote, support a candidate, and they align themselves so that when the next, when the, after the inauguration and there's jobs being looked at, that they remain in there. Of course, all of the people behind the candidate are also looking for a job. There's been several times when people have come to me asking me, Mr. Nez, I would like to support you, but what do you have in store for me? What do I get out of my support? My reply was always, I am not going to ask for your support, nor am I going to ask for your vote by offering you a job. I want you to believe in the philosophy that I am running on, the philosophy that I think is good for the people. And by supporting that, should I get blessed in order to move forward, I will be there to continue that philosophy. And once I realize, just like through the sweat equity of how my grandfather used to do, is that Well, those are some fundamental traditional philosophies that I lived and I operate on. If I am going to qualify for the Navajo Nation presidential elect, should that have been happen, you know, the same thing. So I tried not to make it a job issue. I tried to make it so that it was an economic concern about how that we can collectively hold hands, standing side by side, and move forward. Well, I've known every one of them. When I was saying that 17 people that ran, I'm not disgruntled about losing. I am glad that I had this experience and this opportunity to reconnect with my people. I was glad that I was able to go the real grassroots people. Like I said last night, there, in my opinion, there are three different segments you've got in a campaign. You've got the people who are absolutely grassroots. Number two, you've got tribal employees, and then you've got family. And whatever the dynamics of those are, politics here in Salt Lake City, Utah, I have operated and worked with Mike Leavitt, who was the former governor. I've worked with other governors during their campaigns. I've worked with senators for their campaign. I have also... I have also worked with congressional people, and I know how that political machinery works, mayor's office, and have supported, sat in on political think tank. And I tell you one thing, my experience of comparing the two sides, I'm glad that I had a wonder, you know, that I was able to file and I was able to be out there and talk and try to implement a different type of politicking. So, and that was that giving the Navajo people hope that they can empower themselves so that they can become self-sufficient and self-reliant, so they didn't have to rely on the only largest employer, which is the Navajo Nation government, all the way from central government to chapter governments and so forth. So, excuse me, if you look at that dynamics, it's very clear. So, having said that, some interesting things, I guess, happened recently, and it's really kind of disheartening. In fact, as of last night, I heard that the Tisto, Delcon, and possibly the Loop chapter houses were burned. Isn't that just ironic that three chapters would be affiliated with a fire? But the only pictures that I've seen is the Tisto. And you talk about a total loss. Imagine all of the records or even computer which has the records of that particular chapter house. What happened to those? Did somebody have a backup? Was it intentionally set? Was it a, what happened? If any of you out there have any information, of course, at this point, it just basically be, just speculation, pure speculation. So, again, you're listening to Navajo Politics with Cal Nez, and this is Navajo Internet Radio, and this evening, topic of discussion would be the Navajo Nation presidential election. If you have any other thoughts in reference to the process, because this is, we had 17, narrowed down to 2. The 2 is going to move on forward. We've got 2 vice president, and the election is going to happen in November. Now, there's all sorts of discussion on Facebook, some very highly packed emotions, and also some of the texts and emails and telephone calls that I've been getting on the sideline or right before the 5 o'clock deadline of making a complaint. I seriously looked at a lot of those. I looked at the dynamics behind them. What is it that this group or this individual or whoever it is that is bringing this concept? And, of course, I'm not going to go in there and just jump on a certain bandwagon and hope for the best. Politics shouldn't work that way. I've never seen that type of politicking here in the state of Utah. What I've seen here is that when a candidate announces, people join him. He doesn't go around asking, and, well, in some cases, yes, he does. He looks at the, you know, at the key figures. But, you know, most of the time, volunteers and people, they come and they join him. But he doesn't go around to everyone in his community asking them personally for their help. And this is what I discovered to be the difference. And it became very, very emotional. And see, what part of the thing that they were looking for is that what is in this for me? And the reason why, and that is that those or how the stage was set since the signing of the treaty. The treaty has given our entire chapter house, Navajo Nation government. Not because I totally agree, but because I feel that there is some sort of a residual that's packed in for me on a particular candidate. Now, if you guys have a different opinion and you think that the dynamics of how Navajo Nation politics work, you're welcome to call in. I want to hear from you. I want to hear, see what type of a philosophy and what you think is contributing to this. Now, that cycle is going to continue until somebody steps in and reminds the Navajo people that in order to have real sovereignty, right now we don't, in order to have real self-sufficiency and self-reliance so that we're able to sustain a living, provide the basic sustenance for our people, we have got to add another dimension, which was business. I've said this all the way through, but of course you couldn't really say that in 2 minutes because there was a question. I tried to go in there and answer the question and then talk about some of the politics, or at least talk about what I'm talking about now. But how many people got it, and I'm not sure. Eventually, when we started out with the campaign, everybody, all the 16 others, had a certain philosophy. The evolution of this whole thing, and I've got it all noted in all the records, and you can even re-listen to, if it's archived, the KTNN radio forums, is that on there, everybody started morphing over to adding business to their platform. And sometimes people didn't even know what the Navajo Business Opportunity Act. A great example is when I was down in ASU during that debate. And by the way, I think that that debate was the absolute, the best. I had hoped that somebody would have videotaped that and put it online. I haven't seen it anywhere. And also the ASU, that was a debate. I love the way that they matched up two candidates. We got up there, asked the questions, and we had a choice, one to go first or the other. One person presented, and then we had rebuttal period, and then so forth. And so we were given two opportunities to rebut. And that was absolutely a wonderful format. And what that did is it really expose the weaknesses of one of a candidate's philosophy, whether or not they understood the format of a debate. A debate, I mean, I was on a high school debate team for 4 years, so I was glad and very much prepared, knowing how to debate. But most of the people, they got up there and they just basically said, "Hi, how are you? I agree with him," and then they went back and forth and sat down. There was no debate. They were just confirming each other's ideology. Debate is where you ask what a philosophy is, or you try to expose what it is that the weakness of the other one or record and so forth. And that is a debate. There is an actual formal outline of what a debate is. And that's the closest that we came. Now, in that ASU forum, there was about 11 or 12 candidates that were there, the president being one of them, and a lot of the key front runners were also there. And here's the question that I asked, and this is talking still about business. The very foundation of our Navajo, what could possibly change this entire paradigm of our Navajo Nation economic system, and where people don't have to rely on the Navajo Nation government, and that's this law, Navajo Business Opportunity Act. And the question was asked to me, "Mr. Nez, how would you address business and bring in economic to the Navajo Nation?" My answer was this: ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to give you the one solid solution that's going to change the destiny of the Navajo Nation. I turned around, but I said, let me ask these candidates, if they understand this one thing, this is on record. I turned around, I said, can any of you sitting back here tell me what it is that the Navajo Business Opportunity Act, NBOA, anybody familiar with that? By show of hands, please raise your hand. Well, this is what happened. Ben Shelley, the president of the Navajo Nation, he unsurely was the only one that moved his hand about halfway, about the level of his chin, and he put it back down. None of the other candidates even moved their hand. Now, that tells you something about how that the system, why that the direction of all of our politicians and the people who've been there, believe me, I know Joe Shirley's and his administration, and I don't know much about Chris Descheny other than he's a politician, and, you know, I purposely said all along, I'm not a politician. I don't want to be known as a politician. I'm a businessman. I want to bring some hope. And how that ideology is going to recycle? Are they going to change? Another interesting thing that I heard was that Joe Shirley's administration was looking towards placing emphasis on the younger generation. I think that Chris Descheny is also doing the same thing. And I think that's where we get this traditional and non-traditional or the younger generation coming to the forefront. So is that the scenario that we set ourselves up with? And come Monday, depending on how many of the complaints or whatever it is that came in, if not, maybe they didn't. So I'm not sure. So again, the telephone number here is 323-642-1708. You're welcome to call me and share your opinions, agree with me, disagree with me, or just whatever you want to talk about. I'm here. I would like to continue to discuss these very, very important. I mean, these are important questions and concerns about our Navajo Nation government. I'm talking as a citizen of the Navajo Nation. I am not talking as a politician, nor am I talking as a former candidate. Those are past. The here and now, as we sit here, is that I'm a citizen with a Navajo person that is from Tsetlaus, my voting chapter, and I have a census number. And therefore, that gives me the right to talk about some of the issues. Maybe I'm, you know, there's a lot of talk, a lot of calls, you know, behind the scenes. But you know what? That's as far as they go, one or two people calling in. But what I'm looking at, what I want, is I want you out there to show and to share your thoughts about what, is it true that we should just continue to allow the government to run so that they continue to feed the Navajo people? So that's something for you to think about. So, Ashore, Are, Hulle, Do, Kuroi, Eshadidne, 323-642-1708. And we will be back after the break. You're listening to Navajo Politics with Calum Nez, and this is Navajo Internet Radio, and of course we're going all over the world, and people, our audience, it's absolutely growing and will continue to grow again like it did the other radio show. I'm going to continue to push it, and I'm talking about the radio show because I think that we all as Navajo people, we need to have a dialogue. And I'm trying to get somebody to call in about and give us an update on the Loop, Tisto, and the Delcon chapter fire, and which is really, really sad. And imagine how many places, how many former leaders, how many people have going through that those chapter houses, especially the ones that are totally just burnt, just there's nothing left, a total loss. And so, yeah, which is really, really kind of sad. So, so we have our first caller. Hello, caller. Can you identify yourself? And do you have a question or a comment?
This is Buddy Jeans.
Hello. Oh, yeah. Hey.
Hello. And what was that that thing that the Navajo business thing that you asked the people, I guess at ASU, you were saying?
Yeah, it's the Navajo Business Opportunity Act. NBOA is the acronym.
Okay. I'm going to look that up and everything out, so at least I know it. So,
yeah.
Now, the second thing after that was, from your opinion and everything else, because you're like, you know this stuff, is that what should the proper way to go about how my generation is coming up, you know? I've been away, you know, for a long time, and I really don't got that knowledge or that guidance. You know, I can remember when I was in my teen years, on the reservation with my grandparents, my parents, and, you know, my cousins, stuff like that, and learning stuff. But ever since, you know, you're talking about 22 years since I've been back on a reservation. And it's for me, it's just, I just want to do it right and do something. You know what I mean? And that's where I'm standing. What I'm hearing from you is you're coming from a business side. You know, you know all that knowledge. You got the politics. I heard you say tonight, but for me, personally, is I'm coming from the family side. You know, of like a big brother. You know, and trying to educate who I can and trying to learn as much as I can from the elders, but what little I can. You know, what I mean, I ain't crying about what I don't know because now I got a computer. Because of you, you know, I got a cell phone because of you, because you're the one that, you know, was putting this stuff on Facebook of, you know, contact me, and, you know, and it gave me that little nudge of, you know, put up or shut up and just go out there and do something, you know, and I sat there for a couple of days and I got a computer. So now I know there's apps and stuff, and so I know I can learn the Navajo language. You know what I mean? There's no quitting. There's no barriers. It's something that needs to be done and go do it. And that's what kind of gets me in trouble a lot is, you know, I just go for it, and you know, you're either with me or you're against me. You know, so anyway, what I want to say is that I just want to move forward and do the best I can and continue, you know, on the road back to a reservation. But at the same time, politics is always going to be there. It's the people out here that are listening that there's a lot more of us that sit there and hit the grind and pull in two jobs, you know, taking care of the kids and, you know, and still trying to have a little bit of fun. You know what I mean? Everybody I talk to that's in the cities and stuff like that, I talk to, and they always go back home, you know, and they're always, you know, throwing two or three people in a car and everything else and going back home, you know what I mean? So we even though we're off the reservation, we still want to come back home. But like you were saying, is that what's there to come home to? You know what I mean? Right now, I mean, that's where the plan's at, I believe. I mean, the politics and everything else, they can have it. They know how to run that, you know. Well, I'm looking at outside the box. What are we supposed to be doing out here? You know what I mean? There's something that we're supposed to be doing rather than pointing the fingers of, well, you can't do this or you shouldn't do that or, well, I've seen you do this. There's something that our energy is supposed to be doing something. You know what I mean? And that's what I'm kind of searching for right now. And so I guess really, like, from your business part about it, what, you know, right now rather than just talking about it and everything else, we need to start putting it, like, little by little each week, you know, each and every one of us out here is getting a little bit better, straightening up, you know, trying to educate ourselves a little bit more. That way, when the next election comes in, see, everybody's talking about this election. I in my mind, it's already done. You know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I'm looking at the next election. You know what I mean? That's 4 years from now and everything else, and that's the way we need to think, is that right now, those elections should be happening right now in our mind of what we're going to be talking about next semester or the next term. Because this term right now, it's already done. You know what I mean? And I'm hoping and I'm praying every day that it's going to change and we just got to keep that momentum going. And the people I've been talking to, they got it in their head. They know what it is. It's just they're waiting for somebody or something to where they can just go forward. You know what I mean? But once I feel it in my gut that once we start that positive reaction, they ain't going to take it away from us because it's ours. We did that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But they're just, how should I say, it's just that little bit of fear, that little bit of, well, I don't know. But once they let it go, man, it's going to be a free ride. You know what I mean? And they ain't going to be all happy and everything else. But I can guarantee you that's the reason why I'm making my little bit of turns, you know, to come back to the reservation, you know what I mean, and bring a business back there, you know what I mean? So that's the reason why you know, I'm asking, because I don't know this stuff, you know, I may sound stupid or anything else, but I don't know, but, you know, I'm guaranteed next week I'll know something, you know what I mean, the week after that I'm going to know something more, you know what I'm saying? That's where it needs to change. Everybody's talking about, you know, you don't know Navajo, you don't know this, you don't know that, you know, it starts right here. Right at this moment, tomorrow, when you wake up, do something that's Navajo. You see what I'm saying? Learn something that's Navajo. And then you'll feel a little bit better the next day. You see what I'm saying? But at the same time, start learning the politics. At the same time, if you want, you know, you want that money, then you better start learning how to manage it. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, it's that's where I come from, is from the family side. If they can, they can handle a family, if they can handle a budget, if they, you know, if everything's happening and without stress or strain and saying negative stuff on Facebook, you know, about how stressed out they are, rather than that, how happy they are and glad that it's stressed out because they're learning something, you know what I'm saying? Or they found out something that, you know, why is it so straining that they're doing something that they're not supposed to be doing? Or they spent something that they should have spent it on something else. It starts in the home first. It starts right there. I mean, we got enough. You know, generally the young people right now that we're eager, we can do this stuff, and there's no jobs. All right, then let's gather up together, you know, and start our own little committees. You know, something each little town and everything else have a committee. That way, they have like a little club to go to and feed off of each other and back each other up. And then that little group can talk to the next town, and you know maybe have like how you guys are doing it with the chapter houses. Why can't we do it by ourselves in our little clubs? You know what I'm saying? We don't necessarily need to have a chapter house. We can have our own little, right next to a chapter house, we can have our own little group. You know what I'm saying? At least we're going to start learning how to do the chapter house way, but we first need to have the guidance from a chapter house. You know what I'm saying? Because it has to start somewhere. And that's volunteer work where I come from. because that tells the elders, you know, your generation right now, pal, you know, you guys volunteer, hey, you know, mentor us, you know, grab somebody in the community and teach them. You see what I'm saying? Something has to change, and that's the only way I can see it is, you know, putting forth the effort of, all right, then, you know, look, you know, teach the next generation coming up. That way they have the courage. They see what doesn't work. They already see what doesn't work, and then, you know, give them a little bit more. You see what I'm saying? That's why I see it. But anyway, I just got a lot of questions.
I mean, which part do you want me to answer?
Well, which part is honestly and everything else, man to man, what does this man need to do to start, you know what I mean? Put me on the right path or show me something or tell me something to where, hey, let's,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Okay. Awesome.
All right.
All right. Well, let me give you, this is what I shared on the campaign trail, and this is what I shared for the past 27 years. This is what I've shared to not only the Navajo people, but I've shared it with the people from First Nations up there in Canada at a place called Kamloops. They asked me to come up there and sat there and was so blessed to meet with the Grand Chief and all of the chiefs throughout the First Nations tribes up there in Canada. And the various different places that I go, and that's the reasons why that I started the Navajo Chamber of Commerce, and that's the reason why I started the Utah Native American Chamber of Commerce. And that's just really one thing, and that's business. Now, it is so simple. It is so simple to get rolling. There's no magic formula. In fact, I've known a lot of business owners who've been very, very successful. They don't have an MBA. I also know a lot of business owners who've never went to college. They just went and they had this idea and they made it work. Okay? Now, in terms of business versus government, or government and business, I'm not saying this is where people totally, totally misunderstood the concept, and it just, I expected it because I knew it was going to take some time for me to explain what that, what my concepts are in the going to the next level of what the Navajo Nation ought to truly be doing. And when I shared this thing, I put it in the context of, or let me go back to the how people misunderstood that when I was saying that business ought to be added to the Navajo Nation government. I never said the Navajo Nation is a business. The Navajo Nation needs to act like a business. There's a whole different, two different thoughts on there. By acting as a business, you have lots and lots of ideas and lots of things that you need to go in there and to complete your financial, so which is basically fiscal responsibility, accountability, and transparency. You've got to be transparent with yourself, with your family, with your with the people that you do business with, and making sure that your philosophy, your ideas, and all of that is very much straight on. So I just wanted to clarify that. So just real quickly, giving you the formula to get a business going, it's no different than how my grandma. The things that I use in my business today are no different than than what my grandmother did when she raised me from the time that I was an infant. My grandmother was a business woman. My grandfather was a businessman. But the interesting thing is about it is that they didn't know that they were business people. They looked at it as life. So my translation to this is that business is life. Business provides life. And so when you look at it from that context, it is not anything magical. My grandmother, she had a product. Her product was rug weaving. She went in there and wove the rug, spent X amount of days on it. At the end of the whole thing, she finished it, cut it off the loom, and she took it to the store. At the store, they paid her. So business, somebody becomes a professional business when you have a product or a service. In this case, my grandmother had a product, and she sold it. When you receive money in exchange for your product or service, you are now a business person. So same with my grandfather. He was raising sheep, cattle, and horses. They sold sheep to the general public. People wanted to get hungry. They buy the sheep from us. Every spring, the wool was sheared, and my grandfather sold that. And they sold tons of that. And so either mohair or sheep wool. And that made tons and tons of money for them. And, of course, then we sold our cattle. So that was business. Now, if I continue with this concept, so therefore, if you receive money in exchange for a product or a service, really what it comes down to is this. If you're a powwow announcer or you're a drum group, those people are business people. They have a service, which is their singing, and their product are the CDs if they sell any. And they go perform, and they get paid, and they pay each other, and then they feed their family and what have you. Ranchers. You know, one of the most incredible things that I see as I was driving between the junction, the Pinyon Junction, the road that goes between Burnside and Chin Lee, that road that goes from there at that junction to Pinyon. One of the most incredible things that I saw was that I saw some of these little black and white plywood white signs that were either just painted freehand, and it says auto tire shop, open, that sort of a thing. That person is a business. And there could be more and more of those type of things that could possibly happen. So they have a talent, they learned it, and they tried to go out there. And I started in my business with just, you know, nothing but a shirt on my back. I then bought a computer, and then something I love to do, graphic design, and I'm an artist, and I honed in on that. And, of course, I got experience by working for two of the top studios in the state of Utah, and then I used that same philosophy for my business so that my competitors are worldwide. Now, down there, you know, I don't think really the land is the issue. I think the issue is the willingness to go out there and to take the risk. I mean, almost any business that somebody starts with the support of the Navajo Nation government, have to have the idea, the concept, and you develop the logo, your business plan, and then if you need a loan for certain products, yeah, of course you start out small, but who's to say, like, if you start a construction, there's such a thing called rental. You can rent. You can rent a truck. You can rent a tractor. You can rent a backhoe. You can rent all sorts of things. And so if you start a small construction company, you have your vehicle and you drive it around, and maybe that's your first startup. There's no magical formula. If you want it bad enough, anybody can start a business. You see it all the time. Even the people who are now selling coal, firewood, simple as that. Hay is a big business. And why do we drive to Flagstaff and all the border towns? Because there's nothing inside the Navajo Nation that can that fulfills all of our products and services and what have you. So those are an example. So to say and to separate the Navajo-ness or the Navajo traditional, the ideology, to say that this, quote, business is something that we're not familiar with is totally a wrong philosophy for anybody to have. Because when I go back to the word business and I say business is life, business provides life, business provides the sustenance so that we can bring money in, and that money then we feed our family, our children, and every money that you bring in, making sure that you save part of it, and then you then reinvest it into your company for bigger products. You might have to do it in four or five different payments. And so, possible. So, business is really not just a white man thing. Business is not nothing foreign to our Navajo Nation. Our people have been doing it all along. But we just got away from it. Now, and part of the biggest contributors, what I saw when I was on the campaign trail, and that was that people saying out there, you know, I even sat in on numerous chapter meetings, and they give the ideology that government is supposed to provide the money. You know what? That is, well, they provide the money in terms of facilitating or assisting a small business or an entrepreneur that wants to get into business, and but it's not free handouts. Salt Lake City has a micro lending program, but it's paid back. A bank, any bank can go out there and loan, but they must be paid back. It's not free handout, and now you got to be smart with what you think. Some people, where I've heard that they've got $150,000 loan and they got a check, and it was just so absolutely wonderful to have $150,000 amount of money, and boom, they blew it in whatever it was, that basically really nothing to show for. And so government is not there to feed the people. Government is there to provide the mechanism and the tools to help the Navajo people or its people. It's not just the Navajo people. It's any government to be able to have them start a business. So it's really not a white man or a Navajo or a philosophy that's foreign. We already know how to do it. We just need to get in there and allow it to happen. But again, it goes back to the leadership of the Navajo Nation. Somebody who has the business experience needs to be able to apply this ideology so that all of the tribal employees and all of the surrounding people can invest and or even understand so that we make the shift that the government is there to help the people in terms of facilitating and to be able to bring economic development. Somebody wants to get a business site lease, you know, we should be able to have more than five in 1 year. I mean, imagine how big the state of, the whole Navajo Nation is equivalent to the state of West Virginia. You go to the state of West Virginia, there's skyscraper, and in one town there's tons of buildings and businesses and lights and freeways and streets and so forth, high schools, and I mean, it just, you know, and then you got freeways running through that whole thing. I mean, that's just, if it's possible there, well, what happened to us? The difference is the application of this business know-how. And I will stand by that. And rather than believing that the Navajo Nation government, that's their responsibility to feed people. So, buddy, I really do appreciate you bringing up some of these. Believe in yourself. Look at what you enjoy. And base on that, and then jump on that and begin to build it in small increments. You cannot just go in there and take a huge bite and think that if you have any money, that money, a business person will take that money and utilize and reinvest and buy your product, your equipment, or whatever it is that's going to enable you to produce your product or your service. And then you slowly build, and then you sell. You get the money back. You use a little bit of it for here, for yourself. Usually I get a drink out of it. That's it. I don't splurge it on anything else. I pay all my expenses, and then I put, if there's some left over, I try to save it. And so that's a real self, what do you call it? It's a very, 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 it's a discipline. That's the word. It's a discipline. You've got to discipline yourself to be able to, you know, to say that money, if I'm going to start a business, I've got to use it wisely and use it to my advantage and to reinvest and to make it work. You know, the Navajo Nation has plenty of money to lend, but it just has been piling up. In fact, I'd like to know how many businesses got loans last year. I would probably just say, I can honestly say that maybe about, I can count it on one and a half of my hands. I'd like to hear if Doogie Ann is listening out there from RBDO. Doogie Ann, Dorothy Smith, give me a call and give me an update. If Ray Nopa, if you're listening out there, give me a call to tell me how many business loans that you gave out. Albert Damon, Deswood Tome, I'm sure you guys know what your statistics are in the last 4 years when you guys were all running the Navajo Nation. And I do have some statistics during the Joe Shirley administration for the RBDO, the Regional Business Development Offices, and there was a total of seven of them. And their job, exactly what they're supposed to be doing, Regional Business Development Office. Regional Business Development Office. Business development. Well, business development means, I, you know, the first thing you look at is that, okay, is you develop, somebody comes in with an idea, you help them, and you have an established business. It doesn't matter what it is. They're selling flowers, they're selling toilet papers, light bulbs, whatever it is. But has that happened? In the year 2007, I'll probably double-check on this, but remember, this is from the top of my head. I believe that there was about five businesses started that year, and about 10 or 11 business site leases renewed, and I think there's about three business site leases that were started. I might be totally incorrect. I'm just trying to do this on top of my of my head. I should have built to have the statistics right here, but if that's the type of thing that we understand, well, yeah, I don't have to go in any deeper detail than that. I think you can see for yourself. So, buddy, appreciate that. That's absolutely wonderful. I just believe in yourself. That's really where it starts. And once you believe in yourself, you take something very simple. You know, here's why that I believe that Navajo Business Opportunity Act will work, is that you look at the just the gaming industry, okay, or the Navajo Nation. I would like to know how many tribal offices are out there and even tribal enterprises. If you take one product, and this one product is, let's take toilet paper. Might sound kind of funny to me, but, or, you know, to you. But it's a real question. How come we don't have a Navajo businesses or a Navajo business person located on the Navajo Nation where they sell toilet papers? Imagine how many chapter houses, we know at least 110 of them, and then you got all the other offices and how many restrooms are there. If somebody came in and started a Navajo toilet paper company, and even though they're nothing more than a wholesaler, imagine how much more you can buy, okay? What about window cleaning service? How come we don't have a taxi? Paint your Res Rocket yellow and put the word taxi and drive between Fort Defiance and Window Rock or between Window Rock and St. Michael's and make that your first service and charge a dollar. I see dollars hanging up there. So if you drive back and forth, put four or five people back there, you made $5 one way and you drop them off and drive them back the other way. And then you pass your business cards out. Okay, there's that. And the list just goes on and on. Light bulbs, window panes. Very simple things like Navajo Nation Pencil Company. So why isn't there something like this? You can be a wholesaler. A wholesaler is you go find a company out there, like a pencil company. I don't know. I'd have to do some research. And first thing I do is go call that company up and say, I want to buy wholesale directly from you. What wholesale does is you take a product and you can mark it up. Markup is nothing unusual in business. Every step of the way a product moves through the system, everybody marks it up. That's how business works. So if they buy something from the Navajo, if a rug is purchased from my grandmother at $500, the trading postman resells it at $1,000. He doubles his prices, and now that makes it a true retail is typically three times. So you buy lumber, Home Depot. You then go over there and say, this is how I know how to build a business. I mean, you know what? I can't imagine how come there's not any more construction companies out there on Navajo Nation. Why doesn't NHA give out contracts to private small businesses or even chapters and let people build homes? And then there's this one in itself. So the list can go on. How come there's not enough Navajo tires? Imagine how many tribal vehicles out there, let alone how many trucks are out there. So it's just mind-boggling. So that kind of gives you an idea what business. That's really nothing new. But again, you're listening to... So, again, thanks for calling, buddy, and you're absolutely awesome. I'm glad you brought this idea up. And and again, telephone number here is 323-642-1780. And we have about 40 minutes. And we have another caller calling in. And I'm going to go ahead and bring them on. Caller. Yate. I can hear you. I can hear background noise. It's 1453. Can you hear me? Hello? Well, I guess they just want to listen in, and that's great, and that's okay as well. So, that is, I know who that is. I'm going to try to bring her back on. Can you hear me okay, or are you having another connection issue? I guess she can't hear me. So I'll text her because she is online. I can hear her, but I might not be going the other way. So again, you're listening to Politics or Navajo Politics with Cal Nez. And this is Navajo Internet Radio. It's going all over the world. And so things that we're saying here, things that you want to say, things that you would like to share with us, will be archived. It will be on the air, and people can download. So some of the things that I'm saying now, I am sure that somebody is going to take this, and I guarantee you this, that some of the politicians that are out there are going to come up with this. They're gonna jump on this, and they're probably gonna use this. But yeah, hold on one second. There's another caller. But again, here's I've got a caller on the line right now that I would like to kind of touch base with you and with her and give you an update. I understand this is like I guess it's going reservation wide, but I don't think a lot of people know about it. But the in my opinion, it is a real tragedy. What happened on the Navajo Nation in terms of to a chapter house, a call. So if you can update us, Shadeja, how are you?
Yes, Ashina, this is Dr. Patricia Nez Henderson. Actually, I'm calling from Rapid City, South Dakota. I was just in Winderot for the last several days. So I'm sure many of the listeners, I just want to actually say that there's been some tragic news that has taken place over the last 24 hours in my part of the chapter, which is what we call Chejinka, the southwest portion of the Navajo Nation. And what has happened is over the, I think it was last night, two of our chapters in that area, both Tisco chapter and Tiso chapter house and the Delcon chapter offices have been burnt down to the ground. I'm not sure exactly what the details are to this, but we just heard it over the news over the past 24 hours, or actually the last 12 hours.
So did you say that you're from, that's one of your chapters?
Yeah, I'm actually from Tiso chapter. I was born and raised from that area, just outside of Tisto chapter, probably about 5 miles from Tisto chapter house. And I just have lots and lots of memories of the old chapter house, but particularly this chapter house, because this is where I saw a lot of things take place, from get the meetings that were held about Navajo Hopi relocation to, you know, helping my mom get food, from the vans that would come to disperse food, to taking her, my dad, my grandmother, then my dad and mom to get meals for the elderly, and just all sorts of stuff. So there's certainly a lot of memories tied to this one chapter. And as far as I know, and from the pictures I have seen, it's literally burned down to the ground. And it's just,
wow,
it's just such a tragic story.
How old do you suppose this chapter house is?
I would think, gosh, I just remember being erected, I would say probably 40 years, maybe. I'm 49 now, so probably about 40 years maybe, or maybe even younger than that, probably 30 years. So it's, being compared to other chapter houses, it's fairly new, but I just, when the relocation took place, that's where all the meetings were held. That I remember. So that was in the early 80s. And there's all sorts of meetings being held during that time and after the late 70s.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So East Tisto, but you call it a different name. What was the other name that you call it? Is that something? No? Tisto?
Oh, it was always in Tisto. I think you're probably talking about Delcon, maybe.
Okay.
That's what they used. That was the old name for Delcon.
So I understand that there was three chapters that were affected: Tisto, Delcon, and was Loop also?
No. There was rumors that maybe Bird Springs might have been attacked, but from what I hear, anyways, it's just those two chapters. So it's the chapter house in Tisto, like the entire chapter house is like burnt down to the ground, and then Delcon chapter offices. So not the chapter house, but there's like right next door, there's some offices that are related, that building with Birdtown, according to what I'm hearing from my relatives and the press release that was sent out.
So do you, it sounds, isn't that kind of ironic, that kind of the same area, two buildings, so probably what? Unintentionally?
I have no idea. From what it looks like, it could be, but I just, until the investigation is done by whoever is in charge, we can't make any assumptions. But, I mean, I think for me, it's just the history that is attached, for me anyway, the memories that are attached to that. And I just visited the chapter house just recently, and my mom and my sisters kind of went around and talked to, the chapter president and, some of the elders that go there all the time, and I actually did some videos. And the thing that I think for me is very painful is right where the chapter presidents and the officials sit during the meetings, there's this beautiful rug that the Tisto chapter, and I quickly recognized the design of it, and I told my mom, I said, Disha Masana, the design I had it in. I said, and then she goes, yeah, but your grandma wove that rug. I was like, oh my gosh. So I quickly recognized that was my grandma's design, and I took pictures of it, and I said, maybe I'd like, do you think the chapter officials would maybe at some point in time give me that rug, because that's my grandma wove that. And she passed away many years ago, and she goes, well, no, you probably have to ask them. So, yeah, it's just really, really, really sad, because, my family goes there for community gatherings. They meet there for a chapter meeting. They go there to pick up meals, They go there to get their mail. So there's just a lot of memories tied to that. So, but
yeah,
I'm hoping that the community, you know what, we've gone through so much. TISA community has gone through so much over the past 50 years with the Hopi relocation, and particularly the Hopi relocation. I'm a relocatee, and I really believe that this community is very resilient, and we've gone through a lot, particularly during that very, very difficult time in our past, and this is just one more thing for us to deal with, and I think that we'll be able to pick up where we've left off and rebuild something even greater than what was there before. That's, you know, and we have really wonderful, you know, we have a wonderful council delegate, Elmer Begay, who has been wonderful, and, you know, I know that he's there supporting us, and of course all the other chapter officials that are there, and our current president and his administration, so I don't have any doubt that we can rebuild something that can really benefit the community.
Yeah, well, you know, that's, you know, I am, you know, it is just a tragedy. I think about my own chapter over in Sanasi, heaven forbid. I mean, so it's kind of cracked here and there in terms of foundation and just ground being unstable. But just to have it destroyed like that and just, you know, I mean, I'm sure that I can sense what you're feeling. And but I appreciate you letting us know that, Shadeja, and keep us posted. We'll do another show tomorrow night at the same time, and hopefully maybe by that time somebody from the area can call in and get, you know, give us some more update on it. So,
okay. Yeah. Thank you so much, brother, and I just want to ask the community that's listening on air to pray for our communities, not just TISA and Delcon, but throughout Navajo Nation, you know, and whatever, you know, whoever has done this. I mean, there's probably a lot of pain that person or people that they're dealing with for them to do something like this. So let's just pray that they're able to come to peace with whatever it is that they're having to deal with, and then instead of going to this route of destruction, which totally impacts so many more people. So, but thank you for allowing me to be on this call today or tonight.
Yeah.
Shana. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, so, you know that, you know, it is just amazing. I'm not sure what to say about that, but I think it's very, very well put by what my sister, Dr. Patricia Nez Henderson, just shared with us, and that is that we ought to be praying for our Navajo people, that, you know, we've got to unify and we've got to move forward together, and nothing should get us so upset to the point where it makes us move to make such a decision to burn down a chapter house. So, okay. Aro lakwila etzi sho na dindo 25 minutes left. You're listening to Navajo Politics with Cal Nez. It's Saturday evening, and I have a caller who is calling in. And again, she's obviously calling in for another reason. Eloise, yate. I can hear her. So she hears me, or I hear her. I know she hears me. So, you got to turn on or turn off your mute button, or so maybe you're just listening this evening. I'm not sure, but please keep in mind, ladies and gentlemen, we will be broadcasting again tomorrow night, and I think this is, you know, really kind of getting fun because there's the people that are online are really, really engaging. And so, Eloise, can you hear me? So, you know, it'd be kind of interesting to see if I can get her to respond. So I'll just leave her on the phone. So she, I hope that she's a place where she can actually have the phone. But I know she's had some very, very, some issues or some concerns that she wanted to talk about. And I think that I was hoping that she could do it this evening. Of course. So, so I'll put her back on hold. And I will bring another caller in, and this is a new number that I've never have heard, but most likely, yeah. So, Yate, this is Cal Nez, and we have another caller. I'm not recognizing the area code. Caller. The last number is 1367. 1367, Yate.
Yate, this is Jimmy Bob Thornton calling from the mountains of Utah.
Well, so, yeah, I'm glad you called in.
How is
Sling Blade?
Well,
how is Sling Blade? Go ahead. Sling Blade is. So how's Sling Blade?
Sling Blade is doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
What's the topic tonight?
We're talking about the Navajo Nation president. And the vice president and all of the just the Navajo politics in general. We just had a report that just came in from one of the residents, or actually they come from the original area is Tisto chapter and Delcon, which is kind of southwestern Arizona, where a chapter house, which is like a county seat. Both buildings just burnt to the ground, which was a real tragedy. So there's that. And, of course, we have the Navajo Nation Fair going on, and I believe the Miss Navajo, the new Miss Navajo, is going to be coronated this evening. So, yeah, and we've got several people that are hanging and listening.
Let's go back to the burning of the chapter house. I mean, is that accidental? Is that an act of God? What happened there?
Well, I think one of the interesting thing about it was that they, from what she, Dr. Patricia Nez Henderson, shared with us, it just happened simultaneously, which is obviously, I mean, it's foul play. I mean, there's to think anything otherwise would be very, you know. So, two chapters. I mean, that just doesn't happen. They're like several miles apart, but within the same vicinity.
So, what kind of issues that might give one the feeling that there is some kind of a untoward situation that might have caused two buildings to be burned?
You know, that's a really interesting question.
Is there a known Is there a known feud between parties that are longstanding, or is this going to be another one of those mysteries?
Well, you know, I don't dare speculate, but from what I was reading on Facebook, of course, you can take a lot of stuff on Facebook with a grain of salt. You know, speculations about this fire happened because some of the computers, tribal records, paperwork, all of that. There's been a lot of information. There's just been a lot of money issues circling around different people, different area. I don't know if Tisto and Delcon, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to start anything here, but I'm just looking at a, you know, the first thing I thought about was, hey, that's tragic. That's horrible. And then I read on Facebook and somebody said, hey, so I couldn't help but kind of think that, well, what, two chapters on the same night? That is just unbelievable.
Yeah, that's like lightning striking twice, but
same
not
place.
Hitting. Yeah.
Well, Billy Bob Thornton,
uh-huh.
Can you? I'm going to bring another caller on and see what they're thinking. What their calls are. The telephone number is 1271. And caller, can you hear me?
Yes, yate.
Oh, yate. Who am I hearing from?
My name is Joanne Spotted Bear.
Hello, Joanne Spotted Bear. Where are you calling from?
I am calling from Reno, Nevada, and I really love politics. I really love it.
Uh-huh.
I love when our people just back that government up. A de facto broke government living off of our land. And I just love how our people will do anything to protect them, like burning buildings down and to cover up for themselves so they don't go to prison. Boy, they sure good kids.
Do you see that that's...
Actually, I don't like them.
Do you see that that's probably
I don't like
something
them.
That might have happened?
Yeah, I went to the United Nations, and I'm an actual dignitary. And I am suing the United States government for $630 billion. And that's because our treaties are for sale in Washington for as little as $38. I don't know if you guys knew that.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. You could just write to Michael Wright at Library of Congress, and you can get a treaty. Anybody could be an Indian now. Everybody could be an Indian now.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at this thing, and you're saying anybody could be an Indian. You know, so where would that put the Native tribes? You know, at this point, what do you think?
Well, if we don't wake up right now and start helping each other, we're not going to have no place. This government is taking away everything we have. Treaties, land, minerals, and those who are embezzling in that office, them people, whether they know it or not, and I don't care how educated they think that they are, they're helping that government, that United States government, to screw over all of our people across the land by embezzling. They're not looking at the big picture. They're only looking in their own backyard. And sometimes, even myself as a full-blooded dignitary at the United Nations,
right.
I need to say it right, and I need to put it this way. I'm going to say in my own language, Tokaya Tunkashila Wopla Waku, Le Miecha Matonwia Hemie, Chunkpe Opiomatiwa, my dear relatives, before I say anything else, I want to thank the Creator first for giving us this breath of life and giving us this day. My name is Bear Woman. I come from Wounded Knee. I'm an actual descendant of the Little Bighorn, the Wounded Knee Massacre, World War I, World War II, 1973, during the AIM days. My father was a cop. Today, I am a law advocate and a dignitary at the United Nations level. What I have to say is very, very important, and I would hope that you all listened up. In Pine Ridge, South Dakota, on the Oglala Lakota Sioux Reservation, there was embezzlement of $2.64 billion. Montana was $500 billion. We all knew that treaties were being neglected, but none of us knew that treaties were being sold in Washington, D.C. for as little as $38. And so everything that we ever believed in is slowly going away. Our peyote songs, our traditional ways, everything. When that government said they were going to take our land, they meant that. We all know that. But when that government said they were going to take everything, they're doing it. And those of you who are embezzling and stealing off your people, you're helping them to create premeditated murder on our own people. And I wish that you guys would stop. I pray that you guys would stop. I want you to stop. I'd like you to take a look, because we're part of you. And when you do something wrong to us, it hurts.
Mm. So thank you for those words. Where are you calling from exactly?
Reno, Nevada.
Reno, Nevada. And so, but you said you're from the Oglala, which is South Dakota.
Yes.
Yeah.
My people threatened to kill me for releasing the $2.64 billion on Facebook. And my people have said a lot of things. They made it so that I went out and I got a gun. I've already been shot, stabbed, ran over, and molested by the time I was 13 years old. And I'm now 43 years old, and I'll be damned if I go through that again.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like to be hurt. And I was a child, and I still remember that. So for our people to do that again, I won't tolerate it. And the thing about it is those of us who pray, that go to believe in that peyote, believe in that Chinupa, believe in that sacred way of life. Our grandmothers and grandfathers, they told us something, and they told us, no matter how they treat you, your cousins that are in office, pray for them. Some of them might even want to kill you or will kill you, but you got to pray for them, because those are not your enemy. Your enemy is that government. And you need to learn to read and write just like they do, because if you don't, you'll never get your land back.
Let me ask you a question. I think you're bringing some, quite interesting points up. So you're not on the reservation, and you're away from from your own tribe, and you're in Reno, Nevada. And so having said that, you're also a representative, you said, at the United Nations. And so now I think that the idea about the Indian tribes, or I think that we pretty much know the story about why, as far as United States history, I don't want to go in there and unearth that whole history, but of course we all know. Now, having said that, since there was treaties were signed and agreed by from both the United States government and our tribal leaders, chiefs, you know, what have you. Like in my case, it was Manuelito, and there's a whole delegation of them that signed the treaty, and some say it's in Fort Sumner, and some say it's actually right there in Fort Defiance. So nonetheless, it was signed. And but in there, there was some very, very important stipulation that was made. Number one is that they would, if we promise to lay our arms down, that the government will forever is the key word here, that that they're going to provide us with funding for health, for housing and education. And so that was something that was said. And then now, having said that, are you saying to the tribal leaders to quit accepting money from the federal government, or continue to accept it, but just don't take it from the people?
To the people first. Relatives, first off, I want to let you know I love you and I care about you. And what I'm about to say is very important. The money that the tribal government gets is through birth certificates, Social Security cards, and our U numbers. That's the trade of the mineral rights for the schooling, the housing, the health care, and all the agreements that they chose to give to our Indian people. The tribal leaders are taking that money that is freely gifted to Indian people, which is, averages out to $6,000 per month. That should be your rent, your light, any necessity that you need, that should be going towards that, not the tribal council's back pocket. Now, if you don't have a good home, like Pine Ridge is paying rent on condemned homes, I had to send my, what I did in Pine Ridge was I got a hold of Denver and asked, why is our Lakota people paying rent on condemned homes when these federal agencies are getting money to fix them homes? And why does our people have black mold, lice, mice, and cockroaches in the homes, and nobody's doing nothing about it, but yet everybody's getting money? And how come the federal government is doing walkthroughs through Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, and how come they haven't noticed these wrongdoings, and why isn't anybody doing anything about it? So what I found out was the government, the tribal leaders were walking the federal agencies through 100 of the best homes. That's why nobody was getting nothing. So I reported this on Facebook. I have over 1,000 ambassadors worldwide, and one page has close to 10,000 world leaders, and I've been presenting this. And at the United Nations, I told the United States government, they're fired. But they told me to, the United Nations chair leader asked me to give the United States 1 year to ratify and dialogue. Mm-hmm. That was May 20th, 2014. Just here recently, the United States government sent sustainable development to the United Nations to speak on behalf of the federal government, asking that the indigenous voice doesn't talk at the United Nations. Shortly after that, the Bureau of Indian Affairs also asked that the indigenous voice does not talk at the United Nations. So what I basically did was I was able to bring out sustainable development and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. The only thing I don't know is which person said them words. If I would have known who said them words, I would be telling you right now, I'd be saying it was a man or a woman or who it was, because it's always one person to back up the 5% rich eighth grade dropout who says they pay the government to be in office, but yet it's our mineral rights that they're using.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. Some very, very interesting things. One of the things I'd like to do is that we're going to have many other shows, and we're going to be talking about all sorts of issues. And, of course, the tribes have different issues, and similar issues, I should say. And it would be nice to get more information about, you, and because my wife, she traveled to the United Nations just recently, last year, and went with the Human Rights Commission from the Navajo Nation, and she presented and talked, and so it'd be interesting, to hear. So would you be able to join us again at some point in the future?
Yes, I would love to, because the more of us that are educated, the stronger the voice becomes. If the Bureau of Indian Affairs does not want us to talk at the United Nations, my question is, the United States government has went bankrupt 4 times. Who is the BIA to tell us what to do? They're just an entity of a broke corporation.
Right. All righty. Well, that sounds good. We only have – thanks for calling in. And Billy Bob Thornton, if you have any questions, you can throw this in at any time. But I've got my sister, who I hope is able to hear me and get on the phone at this point. Eloise, Shateja, you got – unfortunately, you only got 2 minutes left.
Oh, can you hear me?
I can hear you good now, yes.
Yeah, I had to move around, so I don't know what the topic is or what's going on.
Anything that you can update us with in terms of since our last conversation as of yesterday?
Okay, well, back to the Navajo Nation presidential candidates. There's going to be some new information as of tomorrow. So tomorrow, do what you're saying, that I can have new information for you. Right now, I don't.
Okay.
Like I said yesterday, the middle. So with that's what's going on and what's happening. So it's we're really hurting, and some people don't realize it, but we need to come together. We really need to come together and help each other out, help out the nation. And then there's some people that don't even want to vote now, which is really sad. So,
right.
Hopefully we'll be back on the air tomorrow so that I can, give some update.
Yeah, we will be on the air at 7 and giving an update, and I think that we have about 1 minute left, but within about 30 seconds, what is really, share with the people what the real concern is here?
People have different concerns. But basically, I think the main concern that pretty much a lot of people have in common is that's what they're saying. So that's one of the concerns. And then my concern is the health issue. Just like our sister there, Patricia Henderson, Dr. Henderson, pollution and fracking. I wish I had more time. I don't want to start, but I want to you know,
Let's talk tomorrow. Let's talk tomorrow, Shatasia. Call right about 7 so we can get on the phone. So we are out of time now, and thank you for everybody for calling in. I don't know, so Shatasia, call us again tomorrow. So 7 o'clock. So 7 o'clock sharp, and we're out of time, and thank you very, very much. And we're going to continue with these. There's a lot of topics. I appreciate all the callers and all the listeners. And this is getting really, really exciting. So,